Eager to show U.S. resolve, U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday slapped what he called hard-hitting new sanctions on Iran, targeting the nation's supreme leader. The new sanctions aim to cut off Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's access to financial resources, potentially costing Iran billions of dollars.
Beijing is outraged over a waylaid Huawei phone. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said on Monday that FedEx should offer a proper explanation for refusing to ship a Huawei Technologies phone sent from Britain to the United States. FedEx on Sunday apologized for what it's calling an operational error as it works to comply with U.S. restrictions on business with Huawei. But Huawei says it's part of a pattern. Huawei on Sunday tweeted it was not within FedEx's right to prevent the delivery and said the courier had a vendetta.
Under the proposal that we introduced today, all student debt would be canceled in 6 months. By taking this action, we not only provide immediate financial relief to 45 million Americans who have $1.6 trillion in debt, but we will be improving the entire economy.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's June the 25th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We'll get right to your intel this morning ahead of the market open in the United States. We'll also have some of the numbers from Europe and Asia this morning coming up. On the program today, we'll look at a new study about how weather heat poses risks for more violent crime, especially in poorer communities. And we're happy to have one of the researchers with us today, one of the lead researchers, Killian Heilman, from the think tank at USC, the University of Southern California. And Killian will join us here momentarily in our first segment to go over some of the findings of this new research. A little bit later in the program, Jim Kirk, the publisher and executive editor at Crain Chicago Business, will be with us. Crain's is getting ready to launch a forum on defusing Illinois' pension bomb. We'll talk with Jim about that at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour as well. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks ended Monday flat to start the week as investors look ahead to upcoming trade talks between the U.S. and China. President Trump will meet Chinese President Xi Jinping at this week's G20 summit. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow was up just 8 points. The Nasdaq dropped 26. The S&P lost about 5 points. This morning, as we look at the markets, a little weakness this morning as well in the futures market. Dow, Nasdaq, S&P futures off anywhere from just a fraction on the Dow to nearly a third on the Nasdaq. Around the globe, in Asia this morning, the Nikkei's closed lower by nearly 92 points, off nearly a half a percent. In Hong Kong, down nearly a percent and a quarter. The Hang Seng down nearly 327 points. The Shanghai finishing down nearly three quarters of a percent as well. And in Europe, markets in London, Germany, and France are just fractionally lower this morning. Oil is trading at $57.77 a barrel, down about 13 cents in the United States. And gold is taking aim at a fresh high as the tensions between the U.S. and Iran build. Gold at $1,432.70, which is up nearly a percent. Let's check a couple of headlines. First, you heard in the opening montage there, Bernie Sanders talking about his plan to forgive some student debt outside the Capitol yesterday. The Vermont senator and presidential candidate said an entire generation of young Americans should not be sentenced to a lifetime of debt. The plan would strike $1.6 trillion in debt for nearly 45 million Americans. It would be paid for with a tax on Wall Street financial transactions. Sanders argues that the American people bailed out Wall Street during the 2008 financial meltdown. He called education a human right in America and worthy of a similar bailout. The new CEO of Warner Brothers is Ann Sarnoff, currently the president of BBC Studios America. Sarnoff will be the first woman to run the storied studio. She was selected as chair and CEO yesterday. And Amazon Prime Day is set for July 15th and the 16th. Mark your calendars. It's the fifth year for Black Friday-like sales and has deals that pop up every few minutes. It also offers premium Prime customers deals on more than a million items. There will also be deals at Whole Foods, which was bought by the online retail giant back in 2017. Let's begin this morning with some new research that shows hotter temperatures lead to more violent crime, especially in poorer neighborhoods. Climate change could make the problem even worse. One of the lead researchers is with us this morning, Killian Heilman, a postdoctoral research associate at the Dorns Life Institute for New Economic Thinking at USC. Killian is with us by telephone this morning. Killian, I want to begin first, and I know this isn't the first study that's drawn a correlation between warmer weather and violent crime. Let's talk about what's new in your study.
Sure, that's true, actually. Earlier studies have found this correlation, but usually at a larger geography. So, for example, they found that during hotter weather within a month in a county, crime goes up. What we are doing, we're really looking at very small changes in geography. So we look at neighborhoods, and we show that this effect between heat and crime actually varies over very short distances over a neighborhood. So, for example, we show that in a richer neighborhood, the effect is much smaller than in a poorer neighborhood in the same city with the same climate. So we're really looking at small geographies here.
And Los Angeles is the city that you studied in this report. Give us a sense of what the neighborhoods were like there, because I think we're watching this very closely from Chicago, because there are a lot of similarities in the neighborhoods that you studied between there and here.
Yes. So Los Angeles is a nice setting because the city is large and very diverse, and it's governed by the same police department. So, for example, Los Angeles has very poor neighborhoods and very rich neighborhoods, which are both policed by LAPD. I think Chicago might be a bit different because you have a center city, which is the city of Chicago, which is tends to be poor. And then you have very rich neighborhoods, which have their own police department. So there you have differences in data collection. And we are looking at LAPD, which gives us the data. And police is very diverse neighborhoods. So that's a nice setting where you have very good variation in poverty levels between neighborhoods.
Yeah, we have a similar situation here. We have some north side neighborhoods where it's generally more affluent, and then the south side neighborhoods where it is not. Something about the temperatures here, too. Let's talk about when you start seeing the crime pop off. Is it above 80 degrees, above 85 degrees, and how big of a jump did you see?
So we see about like 0.1% increase for every temperature increase, every 1 degree temperature increase. And we see the biggest effect around 95 degrees Fahrenheit, between 95 and 105%, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, sorry.
So anywhere from, let's say, 2.5% all the way up to nearly 6% increase. And we're talking about violent crime here, right?
Correct. So the effect is strongest for violent crime. We don't really see an increase in property crime. So think about theft. We see a strong increase in violent crime, which would include battery, murder, rape, stuff like that.
Talk to us a little bit about what you think might be the reasons behind this. I know there's part of the study kind of examines the type of housing that's available here, the housing mm-hmm. stock, but there are other things at play too. Talk to us a little bit about them.
Sure. There are, in general, two mechanisms that you think are at work. One is a physiological mechanism. That is, if it's hot, our bodies just don't work as well. We get less patient, become more aggressive. And then there's another story where the environment changes and people, maybe during hot weather, money is more valuable, so we commit more robberies. So we're trying to test it. So we show that violent crime and crime which has a very low monetary reward, for example, domestic crime, crime against your family members, increase on hard days. So we don't really think that the monetary reward story is at play. What we do think is that during hot weather, people become more aggressive, less patient, and commit more crimes of passion. And I think one part of the story we find is consistent with that is that crime goes up more in neighborhoods with older housing. And we think that older housing is correlated with less adaptation to climate change. And here our story is that older housing is less likely to have air conditioning. But people are less able to shield themselves from adverse climate shocks.
And so you talk about possible solutions here, ways to maybe short-circuit some of this. You've got two big obstacles right off the bat. Some of these homes, older homes, probably couldn't support some types of air conditioning. And then there's also the economic standing of the people who live in the homes. They may not be able to afford air conditioning. So those are two big areas of possible solution that are kind of off-limits, aren't they?
Cool. So I guess a solution would be to subsidize air conditioning. So it's a big question. Why don't poor people invest into air conditioning? Maybe it's either they can't afford it or they don't want it. They don't deem it valuable. But crime has a negative externality, right? Not only the people who commit crimes suffer from it, but also the people who are victims. And the victims might be very different people, might not actually live there. But there seems to be like a social intervention where you could subsidize air conditioning for poor people who can't afford it.
Talking about some new research that shows higher temperatures can lead to more violent crime, especially in poor neighborhoods. Days that had highs of more than 85 degrees spurred a 2.2% rise in general crime and a 5.7% increase in violent crime on average, according to the study. Killian, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the impacts of the hot weather. I know this study talked a lot about crime, but we also see the hot weather impact people in terms of productivity and sort of an economic reaction as well, isn't there?
That's correct. So there are a lot of negative effects of high heat. As you said, there's less productivity. Test scores tend to drop on holidays. And as you said, people become more aggressive and less productive.
I was taken to by part of the study where you talk about the output of the police department when it's hot. It's, I think, noteworthy to talk about how the police seem to be exerting themselves less also when it gets hot.
Yes, so that is a very interesting story. The data here is a little bit less concise than for crime. So we do see some reduction in some policing effort measures, such as investigations, so we see a slight drop. However, the data is not that clear. There's a lot of noise in the data, so we're not really confident saying that the police is reducing effort in general. What we do see is that a lot of discretionary decisions by the police, such as vehicle stop, decrease. So, for example, if it's hot, it's much less likely to get pulled over for a traffic violation. We are not sure whether this is because the police is stepping down on hot days or whether the police is focusing its efforts on a more important violent crime. So we do definitely see a reaction by the police department. We're not sure if we can totally interpret this as a decrease in effort, though.
The idea that climate change is going to make it hotter everywhere, especially in the cities, the city that you've studied, Los Angeles is one of them, probably here in Chicago as well, other places. The future really is not conducive to solving this problem quickly, is it?
Not at all. You're totally right. Not at all.
I wonder if you could talk about how that sort of impacts the not only the findings that you have here, but moving forward. What areas would you like to study, perhaps, to find questions that find answers to questions you might still have after this research?
I think the biggest question is how do we adapt to climate change and whether we are all able to adapt to climate change at the same rate. So our study shows that some parts of the city, namely richer areas and newer areas, are already pretty well adapted to climate change. So we don't see an effect in rich neighborhoods. Where we see the effect is in poor neighborhoods, which has two implications. First of all, with climate change, we might expect that our city becomes even more unequal. And secondly, we have to do something. We have to subsidize poor neighborhoods to adapt to climate change. Otherwise, we will see even more inequality between quality of life within our city.
Talk to us a little bit, too, about the cost of all this. You mentioned the cost of air conditioning. What are some of the other related costs that we could see if we don't deal with this problem?
Of course, all the negative externalities we already saw, lower productivity, more crime, lower test scores. And then I think that our cities will become hotbeds of crime in very particular areas. And then these areas might decay even further, say, through increases in homeless population. Just generally, our cities will become more and more unequal, which I don't think we would like to see.
Killian, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Killian Hyman is a postdoctorate research associate at Dornzeif Institute of the New Economic Thinking at the University of Southern California, one of the two authors of this study on heat and its impact on climate and on crime, along with Matthew Kahn, who's a USC economics professor. We'll post some of the links to some of this research in the podcast of The Opening Bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. The stakes are high for Illinois taxpayers to the tune of $134 billion. We're referring to Illinois' system for paying public employee pensions. It's a problem that's been boiling up for nearly a half century, worthy of nearly a year's worth of reporting at Crane Chicago Business on how to deal with the problem and perhaps how to defuse what's being called a pension bomb. Joining us this morning is Jim Kirk, publisher and executive editor at Crane Chicago Business, to talk a little bit more about the reporting and some of the solutions already put forward. Jim, good morning. Welcome to the program.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
I've sort of laid out the stakes there. It's very expensive. Lots of money's involved. And for unbelievably 50 years, we've really done nothing to fix this problem in Illinois, have we?
No, and that's the issue. You know, we are we've seen this kind of play out like a slow moving car wreck where you're just kind of watching and. You know, I think day to day, as people go about their lives, their busy lives and work and play, it's hard to see it. You know, it's not like it's, an issue that's, hitting you in the face, on a daily basis, but it is this, as we kind of laid out at this ticking time bomb. And, you know, we are setting out as part of this year long program, to tackle some of these sort of bigger intractable issues. Just raise the dialogue on really how this can affect people, not only the pension issue, but other, you know, affordable housing, other issues that really have to be addressed on kind of a major scale in order to keep people. You know, this is a great, vibrant city, great state, but, you know, we want it, you know, for everybody wants everybody to stay. And these issues need to be fixed for the long-term health of the state and the city.
You know, as the coverage kicked off the Crane's Forum, the idea that there's a bomb that's ticking, and there's a graphic there on one of the pages of a red background with this bomb ticking, it really makes us think, okay, this is a problem that we've been dealing with, but the bomb really hasn't gone off yet, has it?
No, and I think, you know, I do think when you see it play out in small bits and pieces, and you know, Amazon looking to obviously locate its second headquarters somewhere, and obviously they took a year-long look, and Chicago was up there. We were able to offer a lot for a big company like that to come in Illinois. But I think the issue, like the underfunded pension liability, the fact that we didn't have a budget for a couple of years, those issues make companies very, very nervous about locating here. The worst thing that could happen in a situation like that is uncertainty. And when there's too much uncertainty about the future, you're going to make companies and even workers at some point nervous about sticking around.
The coverage so far has already kind of talked about a little of perhaps the solutions. There are some seven ideas to perhaps stop kicking the can down the road. Talk to us a little bit about some of the reporting here and some of the ideas. I mean, it makes us, at least after I've read some of it, it makes me a little hopeful that there are solutions.
Yeah, I think, you know, the goal of the forum and all these issues is to really not only do, you know, rely on our terrific reporting, but to get some outside additional journalism resources to kind of dig a little deeper and see where there might be paths. You know, I think, you know, we did a story as part of this package on, you know, what the story, you know, what's happened in Rhode Island and Arizona, you know, two states that tackled this issue head on. found a path and found some solutions. There was heartache and a little pain on both sides, on a lot of sides, actually, when it came to Arizona. And those don't necessarily can apply to Illinois, but at least what we wanted to show is that there are paths. We don't want to come into these issues saying that there is no hope. There is, but there are going to have to be a lot of discussion, and you know, in front of being able to come to a solution. And part of this was also, you know, we opened up our pages to a number of outside voices, excuse me, you know, experts who have kind of dug deep and looked at these issues. What we're finding in this is that, you know, there are plenty of people who have brought forth terrific ideas about how to get there and what, you know, on both sides, whether you are dependent on a pension and you don't want to see your benefits decline, feel like you really understand the issue and have a path. The problem is there really has not been a place for all of those ideas to come together, and that's really the goal here, is to raise that conversation. We're going to make sure that every legislator in the state of Illinois has these issues. When we print once a month, our content is free online as part of this package so that everybody has a chance to see it. We really want to raise the dialogue and get people talking about them.
Yeah, you mentioned the Arizona and Rhode Island. Arizona is an interesting case. If I'm not mistaken, there was an amendment there that changed how the pensions are dealt with for some public employees there. People have been talking about that here in Illinois as being perhaps one of the solves to this. They made some hard decisions in Arizona, didn't they?
They did, very much so. And again, you know, it would take an amendment, obviously, in Illinois to change the benefits. But I think beforehand there had been some work. You know, the makeup of Arizona is much different than Illinois. So in some cases, it was easier for legislators to, you know, push through a major amendment and change there. You know, I think you're seeing a little bit with a new governor being willing, at least, to look at opening up the, you know, putting forth on the ballot a major change in sort of like the graduated tax, which might help a little bit, but it's really going to take some, again, I think some really tough discussions beforehand and getting everybody on the same page in order for things to change.
Yeah, I think there's, too, a lot of noise throughout the state, and I know even here in some neighborhoods, if I have the conversation with people, I don't think folks realize how bad it is, and one of the things right front and center in the reporting in Cranes is we paid more to service Illinois pension debt this past year than we did on education. Things like that coming out of the reporting, I think, will open people's eyes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope, you know, and we did cross that line very recently, what we were trying to do is, you know, kind of lay that out over the, you know, a series of years of how much we've been putting toward pension, and all of a sudden, you know, you see very dramatically that you're actually paying more to service that debt than you are for things like education, and I think it really kind of makes a statement that we have to fix this thing.
Is it a good sign that we have a new mayor, a new governor? Will either of these people who have taken over these jobs, do they have potentially the keys to solving some of this?
Yeah, and I think the big key is for the mayor and the governor to be on the same page. You know, I think you know, Mayor Rahm Emanuel tried to address this issue head on, and you know, we were in a period of stasis and roadblocking, and with the governor down in Springfield, and so there wasn't enough done, at least at the city level, to fix the problem fully. And it's not, but it wasn't for a lack of trying. I think, you know, the hope here is that if we, as collectively as a city, can kind of raise the issue pretty significantly, that both the new mayor and the new governor will start attacking these issues head on.
So, Jim, again, the coverage is of Cranes Forum, and it's going to be for the next 12 months. You said it will new reporting will appear every month then in Cranes?
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to attack other issues as well, you know, and everything from the gun violence problem that plagues the state to, to affordable housing, education funding, taxation issues. All those will go in depth and really try to and again open up our pages to outside voices and potential solutions in some cases. And then we'll keep adding to every topic every month. So we're not going to stop with pensions. We'll just keep adding to that with fresh content as we go along here.
Well, great. We look forward to reading it, and we appreciate you being on this morning to share some of it with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Jim Kirk, publisher and executive editor at Crane Chicago Business. Again, the Crane's Forum can be found at chicagobusiness.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street. Dow futures are off nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures down nearly a third this morning. Let's update agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, the numbers and the weekly reports from USDA yesterday afternoon continued to show that we're far behind where we were a year ago in conditions particularly. But the corn crop is now planted, 96% planted of those acres that can be planted. And so we're not going to be looking at that number anymore. But the corn condition for the top producing states rated 54% good to excellent. Normally by this time last year, it would have been 77% good to excellent. Soybean planting progress, 85% of the crop now in the ground compared to 97% normally planted by this time. And let's go on to what the market did yesterday, because weather continued to be a factor, not only in this country in having impact, but in other countries around the world. The wheat market particularly up 12 cents a bushel yesterday. A heat wave taking hold in Western Europe, dry conditions in Canada and Australia, and overly wet weather in winter wheat production areas of the United States. And that accounted for that 12 cent a bushel gain in the wheat market yesterday. Corn was up 4¾, soybeans up 6¼ cents a bushel. And after the down limit day on Friday in the lean hog contracts at the Mercantile Exchange, they were down $3.70 a hundredweight yesterday. Feeder cattle were down and cattle slightly higher. So we continue to deal with weather and will for the rest of the year, probably. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, June the 25th. Today's list of economic reports starts mid-morning with the release of the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. That'll be followed about an hour later by the Consumer Confidence Index. And also new home sales numbers for May are due out today. We'll also get Micron and FedEx earnings. The Red Book is due out. We'll get the FHFA House Price Index that also report today from Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index. Lots of Fed speakers out as well today, including the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell with a speech at about noon today. So some news on monetary policy a little bit later on. All of this could move the markets on this Tuesday, June the 25th.